Thanks. I wanted to continue talking about the prayer of extraordinary aspiration of the Bodhisattva Samantabhadra. But I thought I would make a couple of comments first, because today is Mother's Day. And in Buddhism, mothers are very important. Fathers also, but especially mothers, because in the teachings, as a way to help us feel close to others, the Buddha reminded us that all living beings have at one time or another been our mothers. Okay, so it might seem a little bit far out, you know. You look at Naga the dog and think, Naga's been my mother, you know, or this person sitting next to me has been my mother, come on. But, you know, if you have a belief in rebirth, you know, that's gone back infinitely. So if we've had beginningless infinite rebirth, then there's been plenty of times for other beings to have been our mothers. And if we think about the kindness that our mother has shown us, and then remind ourselves that all beings have been that kind to us at one time or another, then it helps us to drop the barriers between us and others and to feel real close to them. Because I think most of us, okay, we all have family problems, that's a given, but, you know, in spite of the family problems, you know, we have a lot of love and affection for our parents, because without their aid, we wouldn't have this precious life, and we wouldn't have the ability to practice the Dharma. So, you know, we have to be grateful to our parents just for giving us this body. And then we think about our mother in particular, you know, carrying us around inside of her all those months. How many of you are mothers? Two, three? So, yeah, you know it's not so comfortable. And, you know, and then giving birth and then being sleep deprived for years because your infant wakes up in the middle of the night crying and wants something. But the way a mother just spontaneously takes care of her kids, you know, I mean, both my sister and my sister-in-law are mothers, and now they'll just wake up in the middle of the night and take care of their kids very happily. I don't think they'd do that for me if I woke up in the middle of the night crying. They'd say, go help yourself. But for their children, you know, mothers really have that very special love. And so if we think that in previous lives, everybody has been our mother at one time or another and showed us that kind of very special love and affection, you know, then we have a way to feel close to others and to feel connected with them. Because the parent-child relationship is a very intimate and close one. And now, when we begin to see others as our mother, then even their bodies are different this life. Even they do things we don't like, even they have opinions that we don't agree with, still we can see them as kind because we remember everything that they've done for us in this life and previous lives that has enabled us to stay alive and to be happy. So I think on Mother's Day, not only this life's mother, but to be thankful for all of our mothers in all of our lives, and so for all sentient beings. And then, you know, when we have that feeling of gratitude towards our parents, then we want to repay it. And one way to repay the kindness others have shown us is through our spiritual practice, through really using our life in a very wise way. So we can take care of our parents in practical ways, but after this life is over, you know, that's it. But if we take care of our parents by improving the quality of our mind and progressing along the path to enlightenment, then in this life and in future lives, when we encounter our parents, we'll have more and more ability to really be a benefit with them, because the state and quality of our mind will be much higher as we go through the paths and stages to full enlightenment. Okay, so that's why we always cultivate this altruistic intention at the beginning of teachings. And, you know, one way to do it is by thinking of the kindness of our parents, and in particular the kindness of our mother. And if you have had family problems, I think thinking of the kindness of our parents is still very valuable, because it shows us that in spite of the problems in the family, there has been a tremendous amount of kindness there too. You know, just the fact that we survived being an infant is due to the kindness of our parents. The fact that we learned to speak, learned to tie our shoes, got an education, all these things is due to the kindness of our parents. So it helps us have a different perspective on whatever family problems there were, and see that there was also, you know, people caring about each other, and especially us when we were children, people caring about us. Okay? So I thought that's good to remember on Mother's Day, and then next month will be Father's Day. We can remember it again, the kindness of our fathers, every sentient being having been our father also. Okay, so listening to teachings and so on is a way, actually, of repaying the kindness of our parents. Okay, so to get back to the topic, we started last week to talk about the extraordinary aspiration of the practice of Samantabhadra, that one very well-known bodhisattva. Okay, so we started talking about it in terms of the seven-limb prayer. Okay, so these being seven ways to help us purify our mind and accumulate positive potential. So just to review the seven, the first is frustration, okay, then making offering. The third is revealing our faults. Fourth is rejoicing at our own and others' virtues. Fifth is requesting the Dharma teachings. Sixth is requesting the Buddhas and our teachers to live long. And seventh is dedication. Okay, so these are all ways that we prepare our mind for hearing teachings and prepare our mind for meditation sessions. So these are things that, like, fertilize our mind, soften our mind, make it easier for the Dharma to go in. And so especially if we're stuck in our practice and we don't feel like we're getting anywhere, if we feel like our mind is really tough and hard and we listen to teachings but nothing happens, or we sit down to meditate and nothing happens, then that's an indication that our mind is very, very obscured by negative karma. And at that time, if we put more effort into doing this seven-limb prayer and really thinking about it and purifying our mind and collecting positive potential, then that will help free us of the various obstacles that we encounter along the path. Okay. So it's very important, because we all go through times in our practice where we feel really stuck. Yeah? Haven't you had that? You know, you sit down to meditate. You're wide awake before you meditate. Sit down, clunk. Okay? Or you're really concentrated when you have to paint a picture, but you sit to listen to Dharma teachings, your mind's completely distracted all over the place. Okay? So this is because of the obscuration on our mind. So the seven-limb prayer helps remove those kinds of obscurations. So last time we talked about the first limb of prostrations. So it was covered by the first several verses. Okay, so the verse that started, "You lions amongst humans," that talked about bowing down physically and verbally and mentally. Okay, and then the second verse, the one that starts with the energy of aspiration for the bodhisattva way, "With a sense of deep respect and with as many bodies as atoms of the world, to all you Buddhas imagined as real, I bow down." And so here, just to review, we imagine ourselves having many, many bodies, filling all of space, or we imagined all sentient beings in human form around us, and all of us physically bowing down to the Buddhas. So physical bowing can be a small action, just putting our two palms together like this, or like we did before we started teachings, we can do bigger bows, and then each of the Buddhist traditions has its own way to bow and the own symbolism for that way to bow. I won't describe all of that now, but it's very helpful to also learn how to do the physical bows because the whole process of bowing, of prostrating, it humbles us, it gets rid of our pride, and so that way we become more open and receptive vessels when we listen to the teachings. And also by bowing, we learn to look at the qualities of whoever it is we're bowing to. And in this case, we start to think about, well, what are the qualities of an enlightened being? What are the qualities of a bodhisattva? What is it that I'm admiring? Okay, so we're not just admiring the Buddhas and bodhisattvas because somebody else told us that they're good guys and that we should do that. Okay, that doesn't have much purpose and much meaning. Okay, but when we think about the Buddha's qualities, you know, like we were talking last week, the Buddha is somebody who never gets angry. And if we think about that, you know, what would it be like never to get angry again? I mean, even somebody comes and tells you off, you never get angry. And you're not suppressing it. It's just, there's no anger there. I mean, that's quite an accomplishment, I think, and I definitely want to bow down to that because I'm very far from that. Okay? Or a Buddha is somebody who isn't selfish, you know? And again, I look at myself all the time thinking how I can get the best, how I can get the most. And yet to think, you know, here's a Buddha and somebody just spontaneously cherishing others more than themselves. I mean, I think that's fantastic. And a Buddha doesn't even feel like they're suffering when they cherish others. You know, sometimes when I do something nice for somebody else, my mind's complaining, you know, why do I have to do this? Why can't they do it? You know? But a Buddha, you know, just helps everybody, just no complaints, totally joyful and happy to work for the benefit of others. So if we think of these kinds of qualities of an enlightened one, and we think that that is also our potential, then, you know, bowing down to those qualities is fantastic. Or you think that a Buddha is somebody who knows both the conventional nature of things and their deeper mode of existence. Now, somebody whose mind is completely free of ignorance, so their mind isn't making up false stories about things. The Buddha's mind isn't projecting false things. They see things as empty of inherent existence and yet arising dependently. Now, and when I compare that with my way of perceiving things, there's a real big difference. I don't see things as dependently arising. I see them as very concrete. And yet when I sit down and analyze, I know they aren't concrete, I know they're dependent, but my mind's so obscured that I think they exist in the opposite way than they do exist. So when I think of a Buddha actually perceiving the nature of reality correctly, wow, you know, I want to bow down to that because that's an attainment that I respect, that I see I don't have, you know, that if I had it, you know, certainly my life would be a lot better and so would the lives of everybody else who had to live with me. Okay? So, you know, when we're bowing, we're also thinking of the qualities of the Buddha in this way. Okay? So that second verse was physically bowing down. The third verse, on every atom are Buddhas, numberless as atoms, each admits a host of bodhisattvas. I am confident the sphere of all phenomena is entirely filled with Buddhas in this way. Okay, so that verse is bowing down mentally. So it's mentally bowing because in our imagination, okay, we are, well, not even, it's in our imagination, in reality, it's hard to say, but we're recognizing that there's Buddhas and Bodhisattvas throughout all of space. Okay, and so in our mind, we're seeing, you know, each atom having a Buddha surrounded by bodhisattvas. And I think that's a really beautiful image instead of seeing things as, you know, with our ordinary judgment. To think that they're all made of atoms and each atom is a Buddha, surrounded by bodhisattvas, and so, you know, we're mentally bowing down in that way because we're mentally seeing the world in that way. And then the fourth verse, with infinite oceans of praise for you and oceans of sound from the aspects of my voice, I sing the breathtaking excellence of Buddhas and celebrate all of you gone to bliss. Okay, so that verse, again, just to review, is about bowing down verbally because we're singing the praises of the Buddhas. Okay, with all the aspects of our voice, so with our larynx and our tongues and our lips and everything like that, we're praising the Buddha. And we praise the Buddha not because the Buddha needs it, but because it's very good for our mind to praise others and to see others' good qualities, because it helps us overcome the judgmental mind that's always picking at others' faults. Okay? Who has a problem with judgmental mind? Yeah? You know, the mind thought, why is that person doing things that way? They should do it this way. This is the right way to do things. You know, why are they walking that way? You know, they're walking too slow. They're walking too fast. You know, why is the timetable like this? You know, they should make it different. You know, why? You know, I don't like this. I don't like that. You know, always the mind complaining. Yeah, judging others, never being satisfied with the way things are. So, when our mind is very judgmental like that, are we happy? Are you happy when your mind is complaining and judging everybody else? We're miserable, aren't we? Okay? We're miserable because we think they're doing everything wrong, but we're miserable because of the state of our own mind. Okay? So how do we overcome that state of mind that's always judging? It's by training our mind to see others' good qualities and to praise their good qualities. You know, to note their good qualities. So this isn't false praise. It's actually seeing that others do a lot of things well. You know, and instead of noticing the one small thing we don't like, noticing all the many things that we do like. Instead of noticing others' one small mistake, noticing all the other things that they do well. And then training ourselves to comment on those. Okay, so we practice by first commenting on praising the good qualities of Buddhas, because that's pretty easy to do. The Buddhas have a lot of good qualities. But then we try and take that same attitude of praising and pointing out others' good qualities and apply it to the people that we live with, the people that we work for, you know, everybody else that we see. And the more we train our mind in noticing good qualities, then the less habituated we become in noticing faults, so all the judgments fall away, and so our own mind is happier. And then also, because we give others good feedback, you know, their minds are also happier as well. Okay? So it's not making up false praises. It's really, you know, training our mind to see others' good qualities and then saying them. Okay, not just thinking them, but being too proud to praise somebody else, you know, but actually overcoming our own stubbornness and our own arrogance and, you know, really praising others' good qualities. Okay? It makes a huge difference in our lives and in our own state of mind. Okay, so that's bowing down verbally and to the Buddhas, and then, you know, trying to learn to praise others as well.